Greetings to you, sweet friends. It is I, Dee Trussell, and you are listening to the Doug Trussell Family Hour podcast. If you're coming here for Midnight Gospel, welcome. Thank you for trying out the podcast, and thank you for watching the show. Friends, my sweet regular listeners, can you believe this has happened? This is crazy. When we were making this show, I loved it, and my mind was constantly being blown by working with the artists I was working with and seeing what the show was turning into. But I didn't expect that it would be so well received. I figured it would be at least a little bit more polarizing. I don't mean that in the sense of like beating myself up over it or anything like that, but holy shit, this is incredible. And you know, I've been trying to do this intro now. This is probably like at least the 12th time I've done this intro, and I've gone from like a terrible, like really, really dry lecture on grief during the apocalypse. Ooh. And then I sort of reverted into absurdity and tried to do like some like, you know, absurdist like songs about blenders that reverse things back into their former form. These are the polarities that I'm always trying to find some balance between, because one part of me really does just want to do like a 2-hour long analysis of like comparing the grief process to the death of default reality, or the first time you see like a wrinkle in your mom's face that you didn't notice before, like one of your parents exhibits some kind of like, you know, indication that they're moving into old age, that thing, you know? But fuck that. I don't want to do that right now. I don't want to do that. And then also, I don't necessarily feel like doing some kind of bonkers commercial for a blender that turns things you blended up back into their former form. You know, I got to find some place in between, which is usually the truth. And I always know that if I find myself doing some dry ass fucking preachy correctional lecture on this or that, that I'm not really telling the truth. And I also know sometimes, not all the time, if I'm doing like singing like about whipped cream clowns tap dancing on the nipples of God, then more than likely there's a little thread of something that I'm somehow afraid to talk about. And I think the thing that I'm embarrassed about right now is how obsessed I am with reading what people think about the Midnight Gospel, and with the joy I feel about having a show come out that people actually like, because I'm like, you know, a Gen Xer, and I got really pounded into my brain from a variety of geniuses who I truly respect that slippery slope between creating stuff and getting caught up in the, you know, as they say in the Bhagavad Gita, you have a right to your action. You do not have a right to the fruits of your action. And that, you know, the moment your mind gets caught up in whatever is the result of something you've done, then generally that means that whatever you're doing right now is not fully you. You're not fully present there. Now, not to say that if you have some success or something, you're not allowed to celebrate it or whatever. It's just like, this is my own neurosis. But that's the thing. I am overjoyed. And I maybe also because this awful pandemic is happening, I feel a little bit of guilt about that. Because so then that's when I really have been getting dishonest, is I'm trying to express right now maybe a little bit more unhappiness than I'm actually feeling, in some dark attempt to like sync up with a perceived horror that everyone is feeling, which I don't even know if that's happening. And I actually the other day I'm like texting with a friend of mine. I'm like, are you okay? He's like, I'm fine any minute. And then I realized like, I'm actually okay too. Why am I trying to do this like imaginary like, oh my God, thing? Not that that's not there. Like, for sure, from time to time, I feel like one of those skulls getting run over by that tank at the beginning of The Terminator. You know, just this claustrophobic, oh, but a lot of the time I don't feel that. A lot of the time I just feel normal. And most of the time I feel like things are going to get better for us. And I don't think my job is to go bugling some kind of like, everything's going to be great. Who the fuck? I don't know if everything's going to be great. I'm also on Reddit Conspiracy looking up the comet impact stuff, you know, which just terrifies the shit out of me, especially if I've been blasting weed sprays. Don't recommend that. Regardless, one thing I would like to say to you, my sweet new listeners, is welcome. And to those of you who have stuck in there, who've been there with me, stuck in there, is that you? Stuck it out? What is this, a marathon? I guess my podcast is a kind of marathon. We've been through a lot together. And to like share with you this beautiful animated series that my podcast is the dialogue of, and to know that you've been there with me when it was happening, that is thrilling to me. And I am deeply, deeply indebted to you for your companionship over the years, and for the messages that you've sent me, and for the tweets that you've sent me, and for the surprise gifts that you've sent to me in some of my worst moments in my life, and for some of the advice that y'all have given me. And it's just to know that we're getting to share this together in some way is just glorious. And I am so happy. That's the truth. God, I'm happy, and I was trying to act a little unhappy, but that was the problem. There it is. That's the intro to this episode of the DTFH. We've got a glorious podcast for you today. One of the storyboard artists for Midnight Gospel, who is just a brilliant artist, Sean Glaze, is here with us today. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. A huge thank you to Feels for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. My loves, I am a massive CBD fan. I'm a fan of pretty much all forms of cannabis, but I really love CBD. And I remember when I first discovered CBD and realized that it was giving me this warm, euphoric, relaxed feeling that I thought was only available through marijuana. But sometimes when I was smoking marijuana, I was getting that warm, nice, euphoric, sleepy, relaxed feeling mixed in with a high level dose of amygdala pumping terror. You know, like anytime a dog in someone's yard barked, I would almost fall over with fear paralysis because I was so stoned on a walk, which is really fun, by the way. Maybe not so much these days since it looks like we're living inside of a Philip K. Dick sci-fi short story. But that being said, who knows? Maybe you love face masks. God, if there's face mask fetishists out there, it must be on top of the world. I digress. Feels is my favorite CBD product out there. I've tried all kinds of CBD. There's varying types of CBD. Some of them have a really grotesque, weird bitter taste to them. Some of them just aren't that potent, but Feels is incredible. When they send it to you, you feel like you're getting vials of some kind of fantasy forest medicine delivered to your door by a wizard. We're talking Frank Herbert, Dune level, sci-fi, futuristic healing goop. I use it to sleep. If I am having sleeping problems, which I often have, because I love to drink coffee right before I go to bed, then I'll have a ton of Feels. You drink it. And if you're wondering about the dosage, Feels is amazing. I had this long conversation with the people who run the company when they decided to advertise on this podcast, and they are really passionate about CBD. They understand that it is a powerful, powerful medicine for the planet. Not to sound like a complete hippie, I really love it though. And that means that you can get in touch with them if you're wondering about dosages or if you're just curious about what it might do for you. For me, I love it either after I've worked out, which certainly I'm not using it for that reason right now because I've sort of melted into some kind of sad, hairy birthday cake person. But I love it for sleep. And it's got a lot of other fantastic uses. Look it up. Just look up CBD. This stuff is incredible. I literally had to smuggle it because it was illegal. I had to smuggle it to my mom when she was sick. And we don't have to do that anymore. And that is lovely. The other glorious thing about Feels is that they deliver it right to your door. And nobody's wanting to go out right now. So that is just an added benefit. It's a CBD subscription service. They deliver it right to you. And if you want to try it out, you can become a member today by going to feels.com/Duncan. You'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feels.com/Duncan. to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/Duncan. Give them a shot. Not only is it an incredible CBD, but they're awesome people. And so I would love for them to prosper. Thanks a lot, Feels. Sweet babies, would you like to dive deeper into the DTFH? You want to go into the dark inner heart of the DTFH, that sweet pulsating glory muscle down there buried underneath those beautiful, beautiful pectoral muscles on the massive subterranean lurking chasm whale that the DTFH is, then go no further than patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. Also, we've got a brand new shop located at DougAtrussell.com with lots of incredible gear, swag grabs, and some sweet blasts. That's located at DougAtrussell.com/shop. And now, without further ado,
Please welcome to the DougAtrussell Family Hour Podcast. A divine alien intelligence masquerading as one of the storyboard artists on Midnight Gospel. A radiant being whose website, lordspew.com, that's LORDSPEW.com, has been given 7 beautiful, amazing, princely, darling truth awards for the last 12 years. He is a mind-blowing protrusion of some incredible blast out that is clearly proof that we exist in something that must be right next to paradise.
Everyone,
open those sweet arms, flap your fins, do a double back thrice, and welcome to the DTFH, Sean Blaze, a.k.a. Lord
Glaze, thank you for coming on the DTFH.
I mean, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. I am.
And are you recording on your end? Are you recording?
I am recording on my end. Currently, I'm clutching my hands so that I don't touch any of my equipment, so I don't fuck something up.
I'm recording on Zoom is doing a terrible recording or whatever it does. So that's great. You're recording on your end. Fantastic.
Awesome.
So, you know, man, when I got lucky, like I've been doing all these interviews and I keep describing myself as like Dick Cheney's plumber who got invited to the Bohemian Grove. And because one of the cool realizations when I was learning about animation that I had was like, oh wow, this is like comedy. Like this is inside baseball. This is a world that you don't just get to be part of. It takes a long time to get in here. And I think that helped me a little bit just because I'd at least had a map for what that sort of thing looks like, which is anytime there's an art form that people want to learn how to do, there is some wall that appears between the place where you want to do it and the place where you can pay your rent off of doing it. And you're one of the first like artists that I met with Midnight Gospel. And, you know, you saw me when I was completely brand new to the thing. And like, you're like, you taught me so much, man, about writing comedy, because the way you write comedy is via drawing, you know, and so All I want to say, and I know this is like tooting your horn, and I apologize.
No, I mean, I
thank you.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the symphony of horns getting tooted over cool. my over my way. This is my stroke queuing up the orchestra. I appreciate it.
And also, not, I feel like when I'm tooting your horn, I'm not just tooting your horn. In some like some way, I'm tooting the whole animation industry's horn, sort of, which is that I don't think people out in the world recognize what a bizarre ecosystem is bringing them all the cartoons and animation that they love.
I mean, it's a different sort of writing completely. I mean, like it goes hand in hand in some ways with normal, I guess, comedy, live action film writing or sketch writing, but it's also with the added implication that we have to make the characters and the setting and the scene, and not only that, is that everyone can do things that nobody can do in real life.
Right.
And so there's this added sort of like anything is possible. And I think that makes it alien for like I've worked with sketch writers before, and sometimes they end up being limited in like they're still writing sketch for live action and they just want like cartoons to do it. And it ends up feeling a little different. It's more about like it's paying attention to it's not only the joke but how they're saying it and the faces that they're making and the timing of the delivery and like you know something could happen that's not even possible and that dictates what the camera is on to tell that joke. I mean it's. There's a lot. I mean, I think you adapted really well. I think that the biggest thing is just being flexible and on your end, bringing that story and that experience on your end and that voice you have and your ability to talk and just improv and being able to give yourself over okay. Like, I mean, this is like 150 people that are going to touch this after I touch it.
Yeah.
You know, like letting it, like setting it free. I mean, it reminds me of sort of how meme culture works. Like it's like you make I could make a GIF right now and I could put it online and that thing's not mine anymore. Like once the internet gets a hold of it, like yeah. I drew it, but that's not mine anymore. And the jokes evolve as you know, people put new text under it each time they send it off, and it's like this evolving life form in this weird ecosystem that is the like internet.
Sean, do you remember the it wasn't an argument? Do you remember the disagreement we had over whether or not Clancy should drink from that statue-headed thing? Do you remember that?
Yeah. I I remember you.
Will you talk about it? Will you talk about it? Because like I want to talk about that. I just want to talk about that moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was one of the first times I met you, and we were pitching episode one, the boards that we had done, and we were pitching jokes. And there was a part where after Dr. Drew gets his two cups of hot cocoa from the president's head, which was part of the scene that I had done, I had Clancy pick up the whole statue and start to drink it.
Yeah.
And I think at the time you like, I think maybe you had thought you had been interpreting it as like mean spirited or it's like something like, oh, he's taking the whole thing and he's going off.
Yeah.
And there was some sort of argument that we had where I was fighting for the gag. And
yeah.
I guess from your point of view, you were like the creator of this show who had never met me before, and I was telling you like, no, but maybe it does work, and like maybe we can tweak it, or like maybe we tweak it, or maybe we can figure out like what his motive actually is and why he would do that or whatever. Yeah. And I mean, and I could tell that you were sort of like, who the fuck is this guy? But also like, I think that's why we ended up getting along is because we could both sort of pitch these jokes. I loved and explain it. Why
I we, hated that we you were. I was like, it was awesome because like there were two things were happening simultaneously. Pendleton's so brilliant because he didn't prep me at all. He just like threw me in the deepest end of the pool you go into. He chose you. He assembled this like team of geniuses to make.
And first
this
of all, I don't even know how. He chose me because he had, I mean, he's worked on Adventure Time all these years and he has all these amazing artists to work with. And
yeah.
And when I was on that first team, I was like, why am I on this first team? Like, I was like, what's happening? But I mean, I'm really thankful that like Pendleton, I can tell that he's somebody who loves finding new artists to work with.
I wish I could recall the process. I don't remember. Like I don't, and honestly, I don't know. I don't know how we.
It's because I had worked with Tony before. He was the producer.
Well, whatever it may, I think. This is what I love about the entirety of the show, is I think all of us are scratching our heads, being like, "Who made this thing? How it happened." But I remember that moment, and as far as like animation goes, I always look at that. I look at that moment in the way that I look at my first open mic doing stand-up comedy, which is that was a humbling moment for me in the sense that like what you might have seen is like, who is this guy, was really you witnessing me trying to like get some, I don't know, any kind of footing in a completely new world that I didn't understand at all. And like, no, like trusting Penn and trusting Titmouse and knowing like, okay, probably if I'm looking at this thing and not liking it and like feeling wrong about it, it could be that it's not right for the moment, but it could also be that I don't know what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess that's always the fear. That's always the lurking, the sneaking suspicion that lays deep down within our guts. That's like you're faking your way through this. You don't know what you're doing.
But, yeah. Well, this is why we need teams. I mean, this is the reality of a team. Is it's like, yeah, no shit. You don't know what you're doing. What? Like literally, like the answer from the universe to that feeling could be, well, duh. When was the last animated show you made? When was the last time you even tried to do like anime anything? Do you even know how that works? Do you understand what a keyframe is or any of that? And how much time have you spent with that in like your life? Like 3 hours? Four? You know, like so that to, that's where the, that's, you know, in Greek mythology, what fucks people up is hubris, which is like you have this pride that's based on nothing. And to me, in that interaction with you, where there was tension and I was like, I don't know if Clancy would do that. That was the beginning of my learning about.
Am I the guy who's falling around Caesar going, you're just a man? Like,
yeah, thank God. Thank God.
No. I mean, but that's, I guess, me coming a little bit from like storyboard driven animated shows like Regular Show or Pickle and Peanut or whatever. It's like the storyboard artists on Midnight Gospel, like we weren't writing all of the dialogue, but there's so much visual comedy that it ended up turning into a little bit of a storyboard driven show. I mean, we're getting an outline and we're using your podcast and we're pitching all these jokes. And so I think that sometimes if a joke isn't working or if you feel like it's strong enough to fight for, sometimes you fight for it and then you can figure out, okay, I see where they're coming from. Maybe we can twist like one thing that happens in the scene before where they look at each other a different way, or he does a goofy face while he does it or whatever, you know, like there's a variety of things to remedy and compromise on any of these situations,
which I didn't know.
I think are really interesting.
I didn't know that. And, like I hadn't, like I'm like going off of some kind of like really naive and potentially self-destructive impulse. Like it's the difference between empiricism and the stuff that gets witches burned at the stake. You know, it's like you at some point you have to look at like, wait, why are these instincts I'm having real?
I think that for everybody, it's an ego check. I had that scene in the first episode originally when they escaped into the woods. I had pitched and storyboarded and pitched all these gags for a whole scene where Dr. Drew is doing like a cooking show he's making food out of bugs and like Clancy's getting stung by a hive of bees. And the thing is, with all of these jokes that you make, you put everything into it and you hope that it works, but you also have to do it realizing that like when you pitch it, that whole scene might get cut and that's fine. And that's the thing is like if I hadn't stood up for that joke and if say if Penn had come in and said like, no, I think Duncan's right. And I would have switched gears and said like, okay, how can we fix this situation and still make it funny to both me and you. And I mean, that's
right.
That's the nature of all this.
The professional aspect of it is that you have to do that. But thank God you were right, man. Thank God I didn't win that argument, because that's one of my favorite moments in the show. That moment to me encapsulates Clancy. That's what he's like. That is him. Like to me,
I mean, he's escaped into the simulator. He's like trying to take in everything that he can and absorb things from this world that he can, these new things. And as long as, I mean, one thing that we ironed out pretty early is that other people are killing these zombies or whatever, but he's not. He's not malicious.
Yeah.
But he is sort of like what, like this almost like Bacchus, or taking in the grapes and taking in the fruits of this world and basking in the interview and the knowledge that this other person is giving. And in that way, he's entirely like present in what's going on. Like he's not thinking about what's happening at home. He's thinking about, he's like right now, and he's taking everything. I mean, I think you're right. I think that it's funny that it's funny that something like that, something as small as that in just a storyboard or a drawing or whatever, that can end up changing things elsewhere in the series. I mean, like we saw that over and over again, like with Charlotte the dog. Like, I don't know if you remember this part of it, but originally Charlotte the dog was just pitched. Pendleton, when I was boarding the pool scene, when they were playing pool, Pendleton just threw a gif over at me of he just drew a dog and the pool balls were sliding under the dog. And I was like, whoa, this dog is cool. And so when they had to escape, I was like, what if Dr. Drew climbs on the dog and all the pool balls come out from under it and it makes all the zombies slip? And then that turned into them riding that dog. And then we were like, oh, this dog's cool. Let's bring the dog back. And then the dog, I don't know at what point we figured out that things would come out of the simulator, but that dog ended up being in every episode. And it's just based off of one drawing, one character building thing.
But it's based off of one drawing and so many different people encountering that and making slight decisions, big decisions, little commenting, whatever. This to me has been the psychedelic joy of the Midnight Gospel, which is like, you know, there's a really, to me, I kind of like, I think this is the kind of saying that people who are trying to rationalize their lack of practice might say, which is, the hand who holds the brush is not always the painter. Because it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Any great spiritual saying is a double-edged sword. But you could bypass your own, like, yeah, no, actually, that person holding the brush was the fucking painter. You just sat there and, like, said three things. And a person their entire life who studied art Made a really great thing.
There's all kinds of ways you could break that shit down. I mean, you could essentially say that, like, the person inside the flesh body that's holding the pencil, like piloting a little, like, megazord thing is actually the one that's controlling the body and doing the... And then is would the painting have come into existence if... he had not perceived the world that was around him. Like, there's all sorts of ways that you could break down that I don't know, that saying and say, like, it's actually not he who painted the canvas.
Yeah, but that's true. You know, I mean, this is to me like one of the like surreal and awesome things about having a show that comes out is you get to be interviewed, which is like, whoa, this is cool. I'm getting interviewed, man. I mean, I've been doing comedy for like 70 years. To finally get to do like a string of interviews has been sadly, narcissistically satisfying. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting interviewed. I guess that was worth it. You know, like,
well, it's weird because if you're doing, I mean, you know, you could do stand-up sets or you could like in conversations, you tell a joke or something. But when you come out with something like this, this is like it has a lot of weight to it. I was talking to a buddy the other day about they were talking about how they vent too much online, and they're an artist, but they write out things on Facebook or whatever, Twitter, and I think that they always regret it. They always regret being so reactionary. And so I was talking to them about, like, maybe you need to, like, put yourself through this, like, this process of, like, okay, you have the thing that you want to react to at face value, the emotional reaction. Try putting yourself through, okay, try writing that thing. And now, is that thing good enough or valuable enough for you to make a short, the 3-panel comic of it?
Whoa.
If it's not, then does that really need to go into the world?
Right.
And so he's been drawing things out, and sometimes he'll get to the end of drawing it and be like, I'm actually tired of this idea. It's not that good. And sometimes it is, but when you actually, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is sometimes when something comes together like this, it's one of the big indicators that it meant something real.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a fleeting idea.
Yeah.
It was something that made it through like almost a full year of people thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And people being open to doing ego checks, you know, like, to me, like, I don't like the term ego check because it sounds like something out of hockey.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Ego check!
Check yourself.
Check yourself, okay? Motherfucker. But, like, one of the things I started waking up to somewhere through this production was that, like, whatever I thought I was or my idea of what Midnight Gospel was or what any of this was going to be was just one tiny piece of a much bigger thing that was a lot of connections. And that, you know, right now the way we, like, look at creation is really kind of like, you know, like, it's primate level shit, man. Like, I made that because I did.
Yeah.
And to me, like, there's a whole can of worms associated with that realization, which is like, man, I don't know who made this. But, like, you know, me and Penn, we sat together and we sort of built this. But did we even build the world? Like, in my most stoned moments, I'm like, did we make the chromatic ribbon, antenna to the
for all the hallucinogenic substances that you've had pass through your body? Your show was made by a bunch of people that were sober, that or, you know, they're on the clock. They're,
oh, please,
come, you know,
on
what I mean?
I mean, those people aren't high. Get out of here. Are you telling me animators?
I mean, I'm sure there
stoned
were plenty of people that were,
please,
high on that show.
But let me tell you something. Maybe, I don't know, Sean, and maybe you know something I don't know, and maybe what you know is the opposite of what I imagine. But when I'm walking through Titmouse and I'm looking at, like, animators, I'm thinking about me. if I had some ability to draw at all or some ability to do what you do, and I knew I was going into like a shadowy alchemical technology temple in the morning to make stuff, I'm definitely getting high in the morning. Like, there's not
well,
even.
Well, let me. I don't know if you knew this about me. I'm straight edge. Did you know that about me?
You know what's so awesome is about you is like you're such a wild, undomesticated creature that I haven't even gotten that far with you. Like, I don't know what the fuck you are, man. All I know is like we get to have these great conversations. The sadness of this. Not sadness, but the problem is with this particular episode, the lead up to it has been turbulence because of the goddamn pandemic and because the show coming out and like, and somewhere in there, we've had all these great conversations. The only thing I can compare you to, I'll tell you what I can compare you to as far as sobriety or whatever goes. There was, and I can't even say his name, honestly, but it's the closest comparison I have to you is, that one of my best friends in the world, Emil Amos, we were friends in college. He ended up being the drummer for this band called Sleep. And he has a band.
Sleep is sick. I love Sleep.
Yeah.
There's a song in one of the credits that sounds very
smokery. No, that was completely, completely inspired by
dope.
Sleep. There was like, that was me. I love Sleep. And drummer's, Emil's a drummer for that band. And like, I've been to their shows and it's like, it's a religious experience.
I mean, it's a whole other thing. Yeah,
it is. It's not music. It's like, you can call it, it's a band or whatever. Fine. You can call it that if you want to, but it's like, it's something that's like pouring out of another dimension. And when you're there, you're like, for a second, you get to realize we're a lot bigger than we think we are. And that's what Sleep is. But, Emil, I got lucky because I ran into him in college and he had sort of been lucky enough to make contact with someone that I won't say his name because he wants to be anonymous. Mm-hmm. And this is like one of the smartest people I ever met. You know, like Ram Dass, the thing with like Ram Dass and like, you know, all the people who met Neem Karoli Baba or whatever is they get to say his name. They're like, oh yeah, we met this guy who's like enlightened or whatever. There's this someone we mm-hmm. met that is so like, so intently not wanting to be known that like, we don't even talk about him.
I mean, that's the opposite of that ego check, right? That's this person that, I mean, it, I mean, that's.
But you remind me of that
that's
guy.
That's cool. Oh man.
That's what I'm saying. Is like you remind me of that guy. And like you like you're also like it's like, okay, I get it. Like you're like something floating in some other dimension and you're poking into this dimension kind of. And the way you're poking into it is beautiful. It's your art. But something about like you have made the decision, like, I'm gonna be a professional. Like I'm gonna have a professional career. You know, I think so. You know, you hear it's so funny in Tibetan Buddhism or in Buddhism, you hear about these, like, there's a lot of people meditating in caves, man. And like, sometimes, like, some of them, like, get the signal that they're the one that's supposed to come out of the cave and give some transmission. And 9 times out of 10, they don't want to do it. They're like, I just want to, I don't want to be the one.
You know what, man? I feel like I started doing it for fun and then. The career was just running parallel, and that at some point they merged.
Yeah,
because I mean, anytime I'm on a show, I'm still just making my stuff for fun.
But that's what I love about
YouTube.
You.
I mean, that's what I mean. I love it.
That's what I realized about you, by the way. I realized that about you. That was like where. That's where I don't even know if you know we connected that level, but that's where I realized like, that's a wild animal. Like, I don't know what it is. I think it's probably smarter than me.
Well, I mean, I think that you're another person that has this compulsion to make. Like, you wake, I feel like you wake up and you need to make something. I mean, even if making something is talking, like having a conversation, like, you release enough, I guess content is a word that not everybody likes, but you release enough things and music and art, I would say, that I can tell that you're somebody that needs to do it. I mean, you want to do it, but yeah, you also need to do it. And there are some people like that, and I'm like that, and I think Penn is like that. I think that Penn is somebody that I can tell that when it seemed like he wanted to back away from having a show, but keeps making other shows, like on Adventure Time.
Yeah.
He relinquished, I guess, the being a showrunner to write and storyboard on it, but still started to make other shows. I mean, there are some people that just have to do it. And I mean, going back to what you had said before about I guess the ego check and being communal or whatever. I think that Evan was talking to Penn at one point, and Evan was, because Evan's a huge fan of Penn, has always been, and he was like, what is it? How does it feel to have this show that everybody loves? And Penn was just like, I don't feel like it's my show. I feel like I just made a show with my friends.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You end up feeling like, it's Penn and Duncan's Midnight Gospel, but like how you feel is that it was a bunch of friends making a crazy show, and it's almost like you're traveling. I mean, one of the only ways that you can travel through like 120 artists' minds and psyches and weird dreams.
Yeah, that's where it's not fair, right? Like to me, like that's where our quantification mechanisms, not just from a capitalist perspective, but from all perspectives, reveal themselves to be like the way like chimps are like banging rocks against something. It's like, man, yeah, sure, okay. I'll say like I love from a like a ego driven level. It's like, yeah, me and Penn. Oh yeah, we made this show. But it's like, what are we even? That's a lie. Like, no, we didn't. Who the fuck made this? Like, who holds the brush? And like that question is going to haunt the next 50 years of human evolution, I think. Is like, that stupid fucking question is the question. Cause it's like from a universal scale, it's like, who made us? Where do we come from? And then from the individual scale, it gets deeper and deeper until you end up in this like crazy web of like legal like realities that is the process.
I hadn't thought about it in that terms for most of my life, but I remember when I first started dating my girlfriend is a very proud communist, and she was talking about,
hold like, on, if, what if you, you wait, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, guys, we're gonna cut to a commercial right now. What did you say, man?
I'm saying that my girlfriend, she's a proud communist, and she
honestly,
was talking to
I'm
me.
I'm gonna stop here and do the most idiotic fake commercial for like missiles. But hold on, I've got to pee. Honestly, I have to pee. I'm gonna just
do it.
Don't hit pause. Just let it roll though, right? Like let it keep recording.
I'm gonna let it roll.
Okay, great.
Catch
this is
every breath.
Such a good podcast. Thank you. I gotta pee. I'm sorry. Thank you. Hey Sean, are you there?
Yeah.
I just want you to know that when I just peed, I pissed blood and it looked like Karl Marx. And I blame that on your girlfriend. Oh. I blame it on your girlfriend. It's
a sign and an omen.
It hurt.
It's contagious.
No, it hurt. It just is. It hurt. I pissed death. So your girlfriend is a what?
My girlfriend is a communist.
Can you define communist?
Define communist?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm the best person to do that.
Is she
but
there?
From my understanding, but she's somewhere. From my understanding, it's when giving everything over to the working class people and taking away things from the ruling class and having the government be ruled by the working class. But I'm sure I'm.
I just caught on fire.
What I wanted to say is what we're talking about as far as this show it's very communist. It's very, I mean, like this idea. And the reason why I brought it up is because when we first started dating, she was talking about, so what happens if you ever get a show? And I was talking to her about, well, I mean, I guess I would own that IP and I would be the showrunner. And she brought a lot of things into question that I think that from what you're saying, it makes me think about a lot is this idea of like, if everybody worked on this thing and like what you said, like you hardly feel like you own it or whatever, like, you know, how I would act in that position. And it's something that I had never thought about or encountered before as this, you know, as this collaboration. And it was a worldview that I hadn't really come into contact with, which was like, if I'm making this show, there are people out there that don't even believe in this intellectual property and someone owning that and it really being this collaboration where someone doesn't own that thing. Everybody, oh, like this true essence of, I made this thing with my friends and it's
not supposed to go there, Sean.
Uh-huh.
Well, those are the forbidden realms. And like,
that's the forbidden realm.
It's the forbidden realm. And I love the conversation because it hits into the forbidden realm. And you know, like all silliness aside, there is a thing in me that the closest I I've gone to Burning Man a few times and like that's called a quote gifting economy, meaning that like you can't go to Burning Man and buy a t-shirt with money. Like if someone at Burning Man were selling t-shirts, it would be a really bad day for that person because like the whole festival would collapse onto them in the most horrific way, I imagine. And they wouldn't be able to sell any. You can't sell things there. There's two things that you can buy at Burning Man. Ice and coffee. After that, it's fucking up for grabs. And so this thing happens in the desert once a year, which is happening this year. And I'm very sad about that because I was so looking forward to this year. On every level of my soul. This thing happens in the desert where a bunch of people get together and they put themselves in a place where no one can survive alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I went there. Have you ever been?
I haven't.
Ooh, we gotta go, baby. I promise
baby.
You.
Baby.
I don't know. I've been saying that a
reality
lot.
Seems so distant. Now.
Literally, what you,
a that, reality that, where that, we can leave our houses?
That shrieking baby that you just heard was lit like a micro-orgasm of me connecting with a multiverse where you and I are at Burning Man. You just literally heard like whatever is the thing we can't see, the tendril or proboscis shooting out and connecting to you and me being at Burning Man together. We're there. We're going to do it. I'm telling
like
you.
Like an avatar when you connect your ponytails and have sex.
No.
Just like that.
I don't mind. The sex part's okay, but why do we have to connect our ponytails? This is so fucked up.
I mean, you're talking tendrils, ponytails. I don't see the difference
There's
on my
a
end.
But... big difference between tendrils and ponytails. Not
pull
to be
up,
like, see,
pull
I,
up the definitions. Pull up the Wikipedia.
This is great. Everyone's going to be like, yo, Duncan's in the alt-right. He thinks
yo, tendrils. Duncan hates ponytails. Duncan's in the alt-right.
He thinks tendrils are different than ponytails.
Listen. Yo, it's tendril gate. It's ponytail gate.
Exactly. Well, listen, you and me and your girlfriend and my wife are going to be a Burning Man.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to deal with it. And the funny thing, the problem with communism is like, you've got this like word, which even you saying it
I mean, you're everyone, they gasp, right?
Well, the killer bells just kill me, people. You want to say the word that killed all those people? Did you see what people died?
And it's like, you say a word like that. And
how many people have capitalism killed? You know what I mean?
But within it, it's, the whole thing is like, interestingly enough, connected to this problem of like, look, you know, you look at a monkey. I don't know if you've seen these videos, man, but like they're sweet.
A monkey videos? Yeah, I've seen
these. Have you seen the 700 monkey videos?
Damn.
No, there's a thing that like, I don't know if it just started or if they just realized it was happening. This is a weird thing, like I think it's chimps are doing, where they take a stone and they're like throwing it in front of a tree. And like these chimps are doing this thing that looks ceremonial or it means something to them that we don't understand. Like, what is it? What are they doing? Are they voting? Are they praying? Are they, what is it? We don't know. We don't know what it is. But it's organized, but it doesn't, like, based on, like, you know, normal evolutionary principles or, like, we got to find a place to have shelter and food or none of it makes sense. But they're doing this thing. It's like, what is that? What is that? Something to do with sentience, you know? And anytime you take that and try to shove it into a word, a number, or to quantify it, you absolutely dilute it, don't you? You absolutely, there is no way that.
You either dilute it or you make it, I mean, you could make it stronger with a word too, but I think that anytime you express it with one, anytime you express a whole theology or a whole theory or a whole, you know, belief system with one word, yeah, I mean, of course, it's an oversimplification the same way as anything else. But I guess my main reason for I guess, bringing that up is like with how you were talking about everything feeling communal, I was just curious about what your reaction to that sort of thinking is. This sort of like, what if we lived in a society where we didn't have that, like, I made this thing, I own it,
man,
you know?
What a relief. Like, to me, in Buddhism, they say life is suffering and the cause of that suffering is attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, God, anytime I find myself like getting jealous, who are you talking to? You know, anytime I'm like, find myself in a weird place with like my wife, or I'm like, who are you talking
to? My wife.
My wife. You know what I mean? Anytime I'm like, oh.
My wife.
That's my wife. That's my wife you're talking to, Buster. Any of those moments, it's like, whoa, what have I become? And anytime I'm like in that space of this is mine, you know, there's pain associated with it. This is not a trumpeting of like, oh, therefore we must become communists. I'm just saying, like, owning something is painful. Property hurts.
Yeah. I mean, I think it spreads across multiple systems of thinking in one way or another. I mean, whether Buddhism or whatever, but like, I guess, is it like, I mean, are we the chimps who like, I have this terror, I have this bundle of bananas, and then the other chimp comes over and bashes my brains in with a rock, you know, for my bananas, and it's like, you don't own those anymore, and we're all fighting over what we own. I mean,
it's insanity.
You know, is that what
it gets worse than that? Because it's not even bananas anymore. It's like a lot of times the things people are fighting over are like pictures.
My wife.
Not even my wife. A picture of my wife. You know, like that. That to me is one of the most bizarre genres of porn. Cum tributes. You know, where someone like
tributes.
Yeah, someone like comes on a picture of someone and says, yeah. Oh, it's a cum tribute.
I mean, it's very was that chaos magic? What is it?
Yeah,
it's very ritualistic.
It's some kind
for
of
sure.
You know what it is? It's some kind of like tumor on, it's like a tumor. It's like your progenitive impulse is landing on a symbol of a thing that didn't consent to get cum on it. And somewhere in there is a maelstrom of like madness that is like, to me, cancerous or something. You know, it's like, what is the, we're confusing reality with symbol sets, you know, and which is, and God, forgive me for saying this, I'm sorry, which is why I love Burning Man, because that's reality. You're in the fucking desert. There's, we have to, if we're going to be out here in the middle of nowhere, we all have to like connect in a way that isn't based on symbols anymore, that we, you need water.
I mean, it's meant to be an equalizer. It's like everyone's going in there with supposedly is it's themselves and their ability to help another person, or
well,
right?
That's the idea. Like, it's self-reliance. Like the idea isn't so much that like, oh, I'm going to give everything I have to everybody.
For sure. For sure. Yeah.
It's really the, for every time I've been there, this is what has happened. I go there and I'll always have a cooler that has within it some stash, strawberries. Yeah. I don't know what, some shit that I think like, this is going to be for me and my lady. Are we going to enjoy these in the privacy of our little private little thing? And then what happens naturally, not enforced, not shoved upon us by some authoritarian tyranny, or not like, you better give your shit away. Suddenly what you begin to realize, like, if I give one of these strawberries to somebody who just helped me build this tent, or who just walked with me in the desert for a little while, or just someone who's got like, who's really cool, who I enjoyed a conversation with, there's like a 30% chance they're just gonna start crying.
Oh,
you know what I mean? And
then you're telling me it's not somebody coming up to your tent and is like, oh, I see you and your wife are eating strawberries off of each other, wondering if I could have one of those too. Is it like that, or is
no,
it?
There's no like.
I'm trying to eat a strawberry off of you, Duncan.
Dark force pushing this kind of reality. It's just, you know, the best way to put it is this: I will like fill a bottle with milk, and I'll give it to my baby. And I don't want, man. You know, at 7 at night, I don't want milk. There's no part of my body that's like, man, I really could use a little sip of cold milk right now. That'd be real nice. But you know what my baby does? He'll just spontaneously push the milk bottle up to me so I can take a sip of the milk. He's not reading Karl Marx. Inside of him is a natural inclination to share. That's in him. It's not regulated. There's no government telling him how much of the milk he has to share. There's no baby network of babies around the planet. It's like, don't share too much with your dad, because if you do, or don't share enough with your dad, he won't love you. There's no stock market for milk sharing among babies and dads. It's a primordial, perfect Garden of Eden level impulse that has holds within it a kind of holon, which has the map of the Garden of Eden inside of it. And so anytime in this realm we're in, we start trying to push that shit into words, suddenly we're saying, well, are you a communist? And it's like, no, I'm not a communist. My baby is not a communist. My baby is not a capitalist. My baby just likes milk and fruit and also likes to share. So to me, you know what I'm saying? Like somewhere in that elemental primordial furnace of togetherness that is society, there must be some way of calibrating things that isn't going to like rob us of our souls.
I mean, I think that any of these philosophies that are trying to really boil everything down to like, I guess, like a faith in human nature, like a faith, like, I mean, whether it's Buddhism or Taoism, or whether it's like the initial, you know, thought behind communism, despite the connotation that it might have with certain people.
Yeah.
I think that any of these philosophies that are trying to say at the very core of it, people are good in nature, people want to share society would be better if sharing was encouraged. I think that there's at least merit in thinking about any of that stuff, even if you don't subscribe to one, just strictly one belief system or a label or, right. or whatever. I still think that they're interesting things to thought. And for that same reason, the girlfriend that I was talking about before, I appreciate that she challenges me to think outside of what I mean. Like that stuff I had never thought about in my whole life. My whole life I've thought about, like, I own my art. My art is my life and my ownership, and that's my, it's my identity. It's what I identify myself with, yeah. and I commodify it, and I say, like, how much am I worth, like, by how much my art is worth or whatever. And I think that it all boils down to, like, I guess, what's, you know, if money was taken away or whatever, why would you do the thing that you still do all the time? And why would you do it? And if for me, I make stuff to make people laugh. Like, regardless, I mean, before I was making any money off of it, I was making stick figure cartoons to send to my buddies, hoping my parents wouldn't see them because they were not super safe for work. But I think that it's always been for me a way to bond with people, a way to share my ideas with people in a way that's more tangible than an inside joke. Even it's like I'm making something to give to you, and it could give to anybody. It's like forging an inside joke out of thin air that I could get anyone in on.
Oh man, that's so beautiful. I've always thought, you know, I'm looking at flowers and I'm like, damn, it'd be cool to, like, talk to a flower. That's kind of how I feel right now. It's so cool, man. It's like we are, to me, I think one of the qualities of the world we're in is that there's this thickness about it. You know, there's a thick quality.
There's
to
a
it.
Thickness about me.
Me too.
That's what you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Trust me.
You know, it's double C thick. You yeah, know, that kind of, you thick. Know, juicy. Saying juicy. No, but I get what you mean.
You know, it was juicy and thick and thick.
You know, there's a juiciness about everything. There's a thickness about everything.
Yeah. It's like
we're all BBW. We're all,
what's BBW mean?
Big beautiful women.
I wanna be
I think that's what it is.
Listen, man, this is it. This is the it's like, we're, to me, imagine if there were a heaven, and that, to put it in the most, like, reductive terminology, that heaven is on the top floor of some condo, right? And on that top floor, let's not even talk about it, because we don't know what's going on up there. But because whatever's going on up there is so amazing, shit's starting to drip through the floorboards. Right,
the bathtub is from up there.
We don't
leaking
know if
through.
It's a bathtub. You don't know what it is. All you know.
I mean, we put our mouths under it. It tastes good. Whatever it is, they're bathing
dripping.
In something up there.
Shit's dripping.
Ambrosia.
There's something dripping, and that dripping is art. And somewhere in there is the realm that we're living in right now as these temporary human beings. And for whatever reason, the realm that we're in right now is really obsessed with, like, metrics. And so we're like, oh, how long was it? Isn't that annoying? To the millisecond, to quantify it, and then you convert that. And what does that do? It sends it further down the building. Down, if you keep going lower and lower floors, the thing that we're in right now, which thank God is, like, at least the, you know, dripping of the, like, some amazing party happening in the God realms, when it gets lower and lower down, man, it gets thicker and thicker. It turns into, like, it crystallizes, and suddenly it becomes like some kind of, like, thing that can't change so much anymore. Now it's like steel they used to cut and cut poke and shit, right? And then it gets even denser than that. And down there at the bottom of this fucking building's a goddamn black hole. And now you've got the Kabbalistic tree of life. And that's what we're stuck in, right? It's like,
well, you're invoking a future, a potential future where artists are the holy men. Artists are the ones that are creating the portals through which we see the divine, right?
How about this future? Everyone's a portal. It's blasphemy, but I practiced my whole life to learn to play the piano. It's like you lived for 8 to 80 years. The universe is 13.7 million years old. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yes, thank you for practicing. I am so lucky that you practiced, and I'm so glad that you practiced. And I mean that. I don't mean that from sarcasm. I mean, thank God you did. But if you think that your practicing is bringing into the world a thing that wasn't there before, that's crazy. All you did was open the window a little bit more for us. And we need the window to open up.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. If you're making a portal to God, you're not making a new God when you make the portal.
Mm.
You know? I mean, it's like when children are born, like people say, like, there's an artist in everyone or whatever. And like so this art, this baby's born, there's this little glimmer, a little speckle, glitter dust of the portal just waiting to be open. And if they access it, they can open it up. And What's new? I mean, what has any artist made that's genuinely new, I guess? But I mean, if we're playing into this belief system that everyone is a portal and art is the gateway to God or the divine or whatever, then then we're all just opening and seeing little glimpses of what godliness is or whatever, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be something new, but that's the thing, is even if it's something that's derivative of what you've seen before, a lot of it still feels new, and maybe that's just
what, you know, if it is new?
maybe God's just spinning slowly, and each time you look through the portal, you're seeing, that's God's back.
This is good this time. Once I ate so much weed, I had a terrifying vision, and in the vision, I saw a version of God that was literally every millisecond dying and being reborn. So that in every millisecond, this being would have to suffer death, complete catastrophic disintegration and reintegration in every millisecond. And each time it kept getting better. And I remember like realizing, oh no, but simultaneously it was beautiful because it's like, oh, I'm part of that disintegration, reintegration. But also it meant that like, shit, if we're like attaching ourselves to scriptures or to words that were spoken a long time ago that are trying to reflect that progenitive, renewing novelty wave, then we're fucked. It's like a surfer, like I surfed a wave like 2 months ago, and I'm gonna surf every wave like that wave that I surfed 2 months ago. That surfer's doomed.
Well, I mean, but maybe God is every single surfer that's ever surfed, caught a wave, and then beefed it, and then the next surfer that came after them. I mean, is God every surfer in a row that is catching a wave and then fucking beefing it on the and getting destroyed on the rocks? Like,
yes.
I mean,
that's,
I mean,
the, if we,
if we're made
cycle.
In the if we're made in the Lord's image or whatever, then are we not all continuously dying and being reborn? And I mean, aren't we that exact image of God that you imagined, but in a sort of like spread out, like we're each one of his molecules or something?
Yeah,
like
that's,
I
right
mean, all of our cells at all times are dying and then new ones are being remade.
You see, so I don't... Star Trek, right?
Star Trek.
Teleporters. You know, yeah. These motherfuckers, they like go in that room, they shoot down to a planet, they spark a little bit, they're on the planet, they spark a little bit, they come back, right? Like, what happened, right? This is a sci-fi, like anyone who loves sci-fi thinks all the time about teleportation. We're always thinking about it. It's like in the back of your head, you're always kind of thinking about like, wait a minute, Is that Captain Kirk? When he lands on the planet, the same Captain Kirk that came out of the Enterprise? Like, did it... Is that the... How did they know? How did whatever technology teleported him... Did his soul get included? Like, are they sure that's a pure transmission? Are they sure that's the Kirk that came back? You know, this idea of, like, identity... This is what we're running into right now when it comes to, I think, society as a whole. It's like we're all like little tiny pieces of Captain Kirk trying to be Captain Kirk. That's not going to work. You can't do you can't have a trillion. You need one Captain Kirk.
You put that on your dating profile. Yeah, just a little piece of Captain Kirk trying to be Captain Kirk.
Me. I could look like the Rock. I could look like the most beautiful. I could literally be Dionysus, like the most beautiful man that ever lived. And there could be, I'm a little piece of Captain Kirk, and anyone with any working sensory apparatus would see that. Fuck that dude. That guy's an asshole. He's not, we're all, that's scary. I think, but that being said, you know, I think what we're going to have to confront eventually, not now, not where we're at right now, these tiny little mothling things that we are, these little temporary sentient fluttering bits of matter that are meaty and like have our little bits of stuff around them that we give to our kids. Like we're just barely getting it. We're barely seeing the reef. We're barely bumping up against the elephant or whatever the thing is, and we're doing our best. I believe that. Do you think we're doing our best? I really believe that, man. And I think as a species, we're doing our best.
I think we're doing our best under the circumstances, and I think it's hard to account for everybody because there are certain people that are not doing our best, but
always
we as a collective whole, maybe under the circumstances are doing all we can do, you know, because I'm sure that there are plenty of people that aren't doing their best, but it's because they were born into a trash can or whatever, you know, like, and what is their best, you know?
Right.
It's not the same best, but I mean, I guess at all times, I guess all we can do is just try to do our best under the circumstances, right?
Well, right. And also, and this sounds absolutely insane, but for those listening, imagine being stuck with Sean Glaze in some kind of communal situation. You would love it, right? That's the other thing. The way you're talking, it's like I'm just thinking like, fuck, I wish we were trapped in a high rise together, which we are.
It's like, come here, be my muse.
Yeah.
Like, everybody come in my room. I'll draw something that your soul reminds me of.
Yes, that to me is like, to me, one of the most blasphemous consequences of the current way that we are expressing our selfness into time is that work has become a term that isn't synonymous with love. To me, that's so sad. People, I gotta go to work. Yeah, I know. You're doing something you don't want to do. It fucking sucks. That's sad. And I know that sounds naive and like I'm a crazy ass fucking hippie or whatever, whatever. But to me, that is the word work and the word love seem like the same thing, and without, I think that's where we're going to be. That's when we'll know we're in heaven, because this is what it is. You know, God is oozing into time, whatever you want to call it, creation, the progenitive outflow, the outsource, the blech, that is the magmatic flow of all creation, or however you want to put it. That's what we're in. We're in it right now, man. It's like, if there was a volcano that exploded into time, we're in that volcano. And we're thinking rivulets of lava. And so, you know, to me, the sooner we like stop being afraid of what we actually are, you know, this isn't communism. That's why I hate the word. I don't hate communism. I don't hate capitalism. I just hate that.
You hate what the words and the connotations.
I don't hate the connotations. Transform them into or what? I don't even hate it. It's just like, God damn it. It's like, I wanted to be in heaven, Sean. You know, like I would like to be where I want to. I don't want to be kind of like looking at the droplets oozing down through the floorboards from some insane hyperdimensional party and analyzing them to determine what divinity is. I would just love to be the person in whatever that fucking bubble bath is. You know what I mean? Like that'd be awesome. I would like.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing. Like with, you know, when you're talking about the word communism, when you're talking about the word heaven, too. I mean, like with all of the millions of words and descriptors that anyone could use for it, everyone boils it down to just the word heaven, which is again only, I guess, it brings up one type. Oh, well, we're up in the clouds and we're whatever, you know. But I think that even that is an oversimplification of what people feel about it and mean by it. Absolutely. I guess.
By the way, I just watched David Byrne on Netflix. I think it's on Netflix. There's a David Byrne, I don't know what it's called, but there's a song he sings. And the lyrics are, heaven is a place where nothing happens. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. It's so pure. Yeah. It's so pure. And like, I use the word God all the time. I use the word heaven too. I've started using the word heaven because I don't have time to come up with a better word.
I think you just ran into why the communists use communism as the word, huh?
But I mean, I just turned red. What have you done to me? There's a sickle tattoos appearing all over my body.
It's, nah, dude. I mean, heaven is a place where you can make plans and cancel them over and over again.
Oh my
you just
God.
Make plans and then you cancel them and you feel good about it.
No one has ever
There's no
said
guilt.
That. Don't wait. Hold on. Wait. You can't just say that. And then start, you can't say anything now for a second, all right? Hold on. Like when they whisper the mantra into your ear. Wow, man. That is heaven.
That's heaven.
Huh. I think that we have certainly. I'll tell you what, you know, one of the metrics I use of whether or not a podcast is interesting is what is if I feel like I've put myself in danger. If that's the metric, the paranoid hippie part of myself that wants to pretend I'm different from you, it's like, shit, man, I don't know. So thank you. By the way, I imagine you run into folks like me all the time. And I've met folks like you before. And we gotta like figure out how to work with each other, but like thank you so much for giving.
I've never met anybody like you, Doug.
Likewise. And I'm so grateful to you for shining your light on the Midnight Gospel and putting your love into this show, because it's through the whole show. It's like, you know, if like the show's ice cream, you're cinnamon, and it's cinnamon ice cream, and it's in there, man. And I am so grateful to you for being patient with me, recognizing that I was like just starting to learn about this.
Nah, man,
world.
Thank you for not just firing me. I appreciate it. there's some people that would have put me in my place a little bit, but I appreciate you allowing me to be allowing my personality to be its natural state of big.
You mean
and
like
allowing
the leader
it
of
its
the,
space in the room?
You mean like the leader of the Illuminati? You're not fooling me, Glaze. I see who you are. They're actually, but by the way, and I know you didn't mean, are you just joking or whatever, put me in my place or whatever, but I was talking to a friend of mine who recently, and I don't mean to end on some dramatic note or whatever. I know you're just joking. I was talking to a friend of mine who had been abused. And one of the qualities of abuse is people who have been abused feel like they deserve to be put in their place. There is no place. Where you're at is your place. And nobody needs to put you there. You're already there. So you don't need to be put.
My man. I mean, my first job out in LA, I moved out here for a writing job and I got fired in the first week. And I had left everything, came out with two bags. And I mean, things like that happen. You know, you come out here and you just get, you try your best and you realize your best was a little too much and then you get fired. And
yeah, man.
So you never know. You never know who you're working with.
You never know. And also, by the way, like I can think of times when I've been outcast where I deserved it. I don't mean that as like, oh no, I'm just, I literally like, I wasn't in key or I wasn't tuning into that or whatever. I'm not trying to apply some system of like, everything's the same or what. What I'm saying is when I think of the Midnight Gospel, you know, which for me has been a resurrective, transformative moment in my life where I got to like meet my mom again. You were one of the pillars of that. And, you know, if I'm ever going to think about my mentors artistically, you're going to be one of them. And the way you did it was just by being you, full, not being afraid to be you. And that like evolved me. Like if you hadn't had the courage to do that, then the show wouldn't be what it was, what it is. And so I'm really grateful to you for that. And you taught me a lot, man. And thank you for giving me your time on my show.
I mean, thank you so much for having me. Again, it's always an honor. It's a special kind of feeling to be able to bookend a series and to be able to start on the first episode and end on the last episode, especially when it's such an important episode to you. And to, not only that, to feel like the work that you did or the love that you put into it really genuinely affects people. It's a real honor. And the show is really something special. I'm really proud of it. And thank you for letting me be a part of that and part of your journey too.
Listen, man, this is gonna make me sound like Charles Manson or some loony, but we were always a part of it, and I didn't let you be that any more than you let me be it. And you know, all I could say is it's grace and hallelujah and much love to your wonderful girlfriend for transmitting so much wisdom or whatever your connection is with her.
She told me to say hi. She's a fan of yours.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, it's great, man. We need each other. That's what it boils down to. You want to call that communism? Go ahead. Call whatever the fuck you want. We need each other. And I need you. And
I need you too.
Thank you for this. And I'm a better person because of this conversation and our friendship. So thanks, Sean.
Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. If you enjoy this podcast, you're going to love The Midnight Gospel, which is on Netflix right now. Stream it. Check it out. Leave us a nice review at iTunes. Subscribe, please, to this podcast. Support our sponsors. And most importantly, stay healthy out there. Stay healthy out there. You can do it. I'll see you soon. Until then, Hare Krishna.